Hi, today's episode is brought to you by Final Corp. 50 years of experience, 50 flavors of mayonnaise. Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Final Corp. Help us slide mayonnaise onto food.
Coming next spring is Final Corp's book on mayonnaise. Check all your bookstores, go online for your ebooks, and get ready to understand mayonnaise completely. Brought to you by Final Corp. Final Corp, it'll be fine.
Final Corp.
Welcome to the podcast for empathy and imagination. My name is Aubrey.
And I am Drew Clark.
Welcome to the show. I stepped on you there. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, everybody, for taking the time on your commute or on your workout or wherever it is you do to listen to this show. Thank you. Make sure to visit our page at YouTube and empathyandimagination.com.
And iTunes.
And iTunes. Wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
Cool. Thanks for your support and thanks for listening. So, what do we got today?
Wow. Well, you know, I think that there's some things to talk about human discourse and about the act of conversation. And if I may preface, I'd like to say that it seems that we have human beings seem to be on this grand experiment where our brains have evolved tremendously, and we reach and grasp to try to understand the brain, the mind, and consciousness, and we can't yet. And like many animals in an air environment, we use muscles to push air through these canals in our bodies to express different sounds. Think of most animals make noises. Mm-hmm. And we've managed to build such an immensely huge amount of information sharing through these, pushing air through these holes in our bodies, otherwise known as talking or singing or speaking. Mm-hmm. And we reach to use this as a finite tool, and I'm afraid it never can be. I don't think speech will ever fully express my mental position, awareness position. So I like
the inadequacy of language.
I'm so grateful for this tool, and yet it is inherently inadequate. And I think that our emotions get caught up in frustrations when trying to describe things through this inadequate tool.
True.
I agree. We have many things to talk about, and there are many ways we can try to express them. And I think that cognitive dissonance is sort of an understatement to where people disagree. Ergo, my topic here. This was sort of requested of somebody I'm a fan of, a podcast I really enjoy. This person, Sam Harris. And Sam Harris is an author. He's a neuroscientist. He's an accomplished
a nerdoscientist.
Yeah, he's a nerd. He's an accomplished philosopher. I guess you could say he's a public speaker. He sort of takes a role up of what like maybe a Mark Twain character might take the role of, minus the racism. So
you think Mark Twain was racist?
I do think Mark Twain was more racist than Sam Harris. I think maybe all people
I
think maybe there's a gradient of racism in all people.
Sure, sure.
Like, you know,
Mark Twain was great, though. He's one of the great commentators and writers of the last century. But, Sam Harris, I'm a big fan of his.
So he recently
Really agree with him on everything, but then again, who does?
I don't think anybody. He recently had
Jordan
Peterson on.
Yeah, and they disagreed.
They spent 2 hours in the trenches agreeing on one of the most simple things.
I think a lot of people were had some feelings about that podcast.
You know, and I think it's a good thing to talk about because
it's on paper it seems like they would be a great two people to listen to.
Mm-hmm. And they agree on so many things.
Right. It seems like, oh, this would be a wet dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
Come to life. But I think a lot of people had expectations that weren't met.
It seemed like, and I found myself instantly jumping on one side or the other, which that's not really the point. The point more so is to listen. And when they completed the podcast, they asked us, the world essentially, to help illuminate to either one of them where the miscomings are, where the falls may have been in the conversation, and where this cognitive dissonance rears its crazy head.
Hmm.
And I'd like to be able to have dialogue that possesses cognitive dissonance and doesn't totally destroy it, the conversation, because I think when we notice the cognitive dissonances, it's an opportunity to reach out to where we do agree and then build from there. But what it means changing topics, though, which is tricky. And Sam got ultra stuck. I mean, like, he couldn't. He was like, no, that's crazy. And Jordan kept coming back with reasons for his belief. And now, did you hear that podcast?
I actually haven't listened to it.
But you know of, how do you know of it?
I just saw it on my YouTube, like, recommended feed.
Yeah, I recommend
and
it.
And I did listen to Sam's, I guess, part of his one of the following podcasts where he talks about that podcast.
He did a little thing.
And he's kind of like, yeah, people want us to do another one.
I think I'm totally on board for that.
Yeah.
Because they're at something serious. Because you have so many people divided. And I have an opinion. And
right. And Jordan Peterson's sort of a deeply religious man, to paraphrase himself. And Sam Harris, as we know, is like, quote unquote, new atheist.
Which he doesn't.
So that that's the territory I think a lot of people wanted to hear them weigh in on, too.
They didn't even get to there because they couldn't agree on what truth was. And I actually just finished listening to it right before we got in this room to do this podcast.
Good.
I've been listening to it yesterday all day at work. It's a longie. And if I could try to briefly summarize, it's like Jordan Peterson says that truth is only can exist if it is in the service of keeping people alive. Sam Harris says that truth exists with or without the consequences of total annihilation on Earth, and that you could say have truth about biology.
It's hard for me to speak to this because I haven't listened to the podcast. But
well, I guess.
But Sam Harris is saying that truth can exist whether or not there's a human there to perceive it.
No, Sam Harris posits that truth exists whether or not it is good or bad or kills people or doesn't. That there are truths about biology to know that we can use to make predictions about the future. And Jordan Peterson posits that that's not true. In fact, the only truth that exists is one that causes human beings to continue to live.
So if it was true that humans are bad for the universe, that would be on the Sam Harris side. Like, that's a truth that is not good for humanity. Whereas Jordan Peterson would, I mean, it's kind
of
weird.
Sort
talking
of. No,
about
no, but it's
another,
not bad. It's not
it's
bad.
It's kind of weird to be talking about another
me.
Podcast.
Good. It's good. You confusing me makes me happy because then I have to try to talk my way out of it. Because I'm a little confused by what you said, and yeah. I like it.
Jordan Peterson is saying that truth is always in the service of human well-being?
No, not well-being, life. He says, why pursue well-being if you don't first pursue life?
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Harris says, there are worse things than... Yes. I mean, there are things to think about that are worse than everyone stays alive. Like, for example, you could posit that imagine a universe where every being in it experiences the maximum amount of suffering at all times from birth to death.
Done. Imagined.
Okay. Now, we could say that that would be a thing to avoid. That would be a goal to try to work against.
If you believe in human well-being, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
once, how do you not, though? How do you, okay, well, that's like, a good question. How do you not believe in human well-being?
Well, there's a couple things. Human well-being can be defined in different ways, but also, you know, everyone has a belief. At the very bottom of everything is a belief in something. So belief in human well-being, like, I believe that. I believe that's a good pursuit. How can you not believe in human well-being? Well, there's, like, psychopaths, right? Serial killers, right, psychopaths.
Right. Extreme exceptions.
Extreme exceptions. mutations, one might say.
Yeah.
And
which is unavoidable.
So that's how. Yeah.
Okay, good answer. So if there were two laboratories, and they were both working on smallpox, one laboratory using a factual science of how to synthesize smallpox in the lab makes a mistake and kills half of the Earth's population, while another...
Deja vu right now.
While another laboratory has the same factual biological knowledge to synthesize smallpox, and they inadvertently save half of the planet from their vaccine that they created. Now, Jordan Peterson would say that his answer is that they are morally bad. He won't admit that there is a biological truth that they both knew how to create smallpox. Like, he won't. That's not a thing he will admit. And that's where Sam, I think, really is like, well, then why? I mean, you need biology to move forward in a scientific manner, and then you can find morality through science. And he sort of says, no, actually, morality is the basis of reality, in fact, and that science follows that. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do with that.
Science is constantly changing, and it seems to me that there will never be a static point of science where it's like, okay, everything's figured out. So to base morality on science is to be standing on shaky ground, because science is constantly updating itself, right?
Well, is it your ground to stand on books from the Bronze Age versions of morality?
I don't know, but there are stories that seem to repeat themselves throughout human history in cultures that are widely separated by space and time. You know, the chosen one, Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces, for example. There are stories that humans keep writing the same type of story, ignorant of the fact that other stories of the same kind have been written. So, you know, Greco-Roman stories and Mesopotamian stories, they have no knowledge of each other's stories, but they're writing a similar thing. So how do you explain that? Why does there seem to be sort of inbuilt stories in human culture? And, you know, I don't know, but that's like a pretty good argument for some kind of inbuilt morality.
Morality, but the thing is, that happens with refrigerators, too. That happened with refrigeration. It was discovered simultaneously on opposite ends of the globe. Now, is refrigeration moral? Right. I mean, I think that there are some sort of underlying themes in superheroes and mythical stories and religions that's, like, undeniably congruent. I don't know.
Well, the question is, why do these stories keep cropping up with the same basic structure?
There's a harmonious balance between nature and nurture. I think both of those cause those two things to keep popping up. Like, maybe naturally there is some sort of thing there, and we culturally nourish that into existence. And that actually, I think,
or it could be that because of our sentient nature, because of our biology, and the fact that we have self-consciousness and consciousness of our mortality, somehow that causes human cultures to come up with these stories that are all pretty much the same. I don't know.
It's a decent...
I mean, yeah, science there are things in science that are discovered at the same time in opposite ends of the world. But that doesn't mean that they're moral.
Well, then...
Because they're not addressing behavior. I mean, refrigeration is not addressing human behavior.
Well, it's addressing behavior.
Whereas stories are.
Well...
Stories are about, you know, the hero who ventures from home and slays the dragon, comes back, and takes care of his family or something, right?
Yeah.
Refrigeration is just a thing. Mm. And refrigeration is constantly improving. And the stories seem to be the same with not that much variation. There's variation in setting, characters, but in terms of the basic structure, again, Hero with a Thousand Faces is a study of that. It's a book about the survey of all these cultural myths and how they all sort of follow the same structure. And Star Wars follows that structure. Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter. All the most successful things follow that structure, right? There's a protagonist who faces a challenge, realizes he's the chosen one, goes into darkness, rescues somebody, comes back. Just that structure, there's more to it, but that structure is like just everywhere.
Have you ever written a story with that structure?
Yeah, I think so. Not consciously, but yeah.
Interest, so sort of like unconsciously, it sort of arose in you.
That's my point, is that unconsciously, maybe unconsciously, there's, because of our biology or our sentience or whatever it is, these stories are just kind of like there in the operating system of humans.
Hmm. Back in the Windows.
Yeah, back in the whatever. And our operating system is constantly sort of upgrading. You know, we have better ideas about science. We know more about the world. But the stories, it's like firmware. It's just inbuilt. And that's, you know, that's the best argument that I've heard. And it was Jordan Peterson's argument. That's the best argument I've heard for quote unquote God, you know, not like a man on a throne, but just the idea of, okay, there's some kind of morality that seems to be built into us.
That's intriguing. I find that very intriguing. And that's one of the better cases I've heard for such an idea. Let me also, if I may, let me posit the story of the refrigerator, because it truly is a story that improves human well-being. The story is now like, okay, this is how you make it. So basically, if all refrigerators immediately were gone, except for the information all existed, we could make them. And that is a story of how to behave. It's how you're behaving in a way that makes a refrigerator that then you can have food at a temperature, but it's safer for so much longer that you can live so much longer.
But you could not have refrigeration and still act morally.
You can also have those stories about Star Wars and act totally immorally as well. There's no
right difference. And you could have refrigeration and act immorally.
Of course. I think they're both true. Yeah. So one does not prove morality. Freeze.
Right. But, it does seem like morality. I mean, morality is the thing that we're constantly trying to figure out, right?
Well,
And philosophy is very much like science. And actually, science, I think, was originally called natural philosophy. But it's a battleground where everything is constantly being tested, pushed up against. New ideas are being injected into the system. And the best idea sort of wins for the moment.
But that's not true now with the story of authority on morality. Authority on morality now is Abrahamic monotheism.
And if you want to talk about human well-being, like, it's working out pretty well.
Well... Tell me more.
Well, the dictum, do unto others as you would have them do unto
the
you.
The golden one?
Works pretty well.
I'm into that one, yeah.
That works a lot better than, you know, kill the infidels, kill the Jews.
Kill the anybody.
And, you know, whatever, right? Just in terms of, like, again, human well-being, technology, standard of living, freedom for individuals. That dictum, that founding dictum of Europe and then henceforth America, has produced basically the best culture and the highest standard of living and the most freedom the world's ever seen.
It's true. As and, with all its problems, it still is semi-true.
As opposed to other dictums, religious-based dictums, that seem to not have made much progress in terms of human well-being in centuries.
Yeah.
So, it's not a perfect system. Again, everything operates by evolution. Nothing's perfect. But some things work better than others at the moment.
Well, that's true, but...
And everything can be further...
Aren't you contradicting
can
yourself?
Can be further refined.
But aren't you contradicting yourself because what you describe as the most successful is in a solid state of permanence? The thing that we are espousing to, say, for example, Western Christianity, it is a there's one truth that never changes, and so there's that dissonance there.
What do you mean it never changes? I'm just saying
one updates the King James Bible.
Oh, right. But they do sort of, don't they go through a process of asking themselves, hey, maybe we should. Should we change our minds on this? I mean, hasn't the Pope been doing that more and more recently? Maybe gay marriage, actually, you know, huh? Or whatever. There's a question. There's a questioning there. Process. There's a process of like, it's instantiated and we sort of test it out, and then we're like, you know, there's probably something better. Let's ask questions about this, and then we refine it, and then the cycle of testing resumes.
I see.
Continues. Everything operates that way. Every like system, the system of culture, the system of biology, the system of philosophy, the system of economics, and the system of understanding those things is constantly operating by a cyclical process of refinement, which again is evolution. So everything is kind of operating under natural selection of the best idea that works.
I hope
best.
So. I mean, I gosh darn hope so.
And you know, that's what Daniel Dennett says that.
To your side, let me agree that you go to churches in Berkeley and it's like the Swedish gay all are welcome center for love plus Jesus, and it's like I agree that they have evolved. In these kind of liberal centrist places, the churches I've seen, the names they're promoting.
Yeah.
The all are welcome, let's just, you know, try to have a good time thing. That seems to be a good example for what you just said. And I wanted to acknowledge that.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about any specific sort of religion or instantiation or whatever. But I'm just saying that. The golden rule actually works really well for human well-being. Or it seems to, so far.
There's no evidence that it doesn't.
Here we are. Yeah. Here we are, you know, living this
rather luxurious
life by the standards of 1,000 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. We would have to have spent so much time, like, chopping wood and carrying water. It would be, like, it would just be different. And the technology is pushing the betterment through invention like the refrigerator because we don't spend all day chopping wood.
Right.
Instead, we have a gas pipeline that pumps a little heat and we're just a little warmer, you know. And you just pay rent and then you can move wherever you want to. It's like like technology and liberalism / democratic free market capitalism, like whatever that is,
which again is all gold. It's all sort of based on the golden rule and refinement of various ideas.
Holy cow, is now technology passing the other modes about refinement ability, because we have this ability to improve human well-being and preserve culture. Actually, we can increase culture by using more technology.
We're always improving culture.
Oh, totally. Well, what about the... Okay, some cultures seem to be steady state, though.
You and I specifically, but everyone in general.
Well, I hope so. I guess they all are slowly.
I guess it depends on the culture, but Western culture, for sure, is sort of like the golden rule and the scientific method combined have just produced this flourishment.
I like that. The golden rule and the scientific method merged together.
That's sort of the basis of Western culture.
I wish.
Right? One is sort of your basic foundation, golden rule, and then the other is sort of your process to improve.
Those seem well married. I didn't write that down, yeah. I have images in my mind, I think, when we switch to video. I want to be drawing. Like, I can see drawing this idea here that I have that I could depict with words and picture.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
And I texted you late last night. We need a whiteboard.
Yeah.
Because then you could have pens, too. And I think with the camera, we could express bigger ideas.
I'm totally down with that.
Cool.
It would be cool to have...
Chalkboard's fine too.
Eventually, recessed in the table is a thing when you have a stylus where you can just draw on it and see, and you can see it because we can see the feed here.
And the sorry, viewers can have it.
Sorry, listeners, we're like pointing around the room, but bear with us.
This is probably our last audio only show.
We'll have a feed so we can see what the feed is. Like we can see the YouTube live feed there. And
that's cool.
And research whatever because we're seeing the feed of one of the technicians.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's all possible.
Yeah, so the scientific method and the golden rule is a pretty good combo.
Yeah.
So far. Not perfect.
But we aren't doing
because
that,
nothing
though.
Nothing is perfect.
But we aren't doing that. I mean, if the scientific method was allowed to operate in Congress...
No one's always doing anything.
Holy cow. I mean, the fact that in the... I don't even know what this means, but the Congress and Senate and the House, there are no scientists... It's all businessers and lawyers.
Yeah, politics takes a certain personality.
And so when you look at our government, it's like you need a spread of skills. Duh.
Yeah.
You need lawyers and politics. Totally needs to be there.
I'm totally on board with that. We have scientists with hyper Asperger's.
Artists.
Hyper Asperger's.
Engineers.
Guys, artists, engineers. I'm down. It's just that this, I don't know. It just seems like the world of politics is, demands a certain personality, just like hardcore scientists or whatever, It's like, it seems like a personality type goes with that area. But I'm with you, man. There should be way more diversity in the Senate. Fuck.
Neil deGrasse Tyson also asks that question.
It's also like if you're a molecular biologist who wants to do some serious research, how much time are you going to have to sit in the Senate all day, That's the other thing.
Yeah, so if you're in the middle of a research project, it's not the right time for you. But maybe that goes in between research projects.
And that's the whole idea of representative democracy, right? I trust this guy. He sort of is going to be shooting for my best interests. So I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to be doing my research, but he might put in a good word for my causes. That's the idea behind representative democracy.
Right.
It just doesn't maybe work as well as we would hope.
How would we describe how it is actually working now? Like if we were to describe what is actually happening now, how would you describe it?
Like a bloated, probably corrupt, democracy. But there's so much bureaucracy. There seems like so much time is wasted by unneeded processes and stuff. Red tape.
Fuck. I sing that in the hills. Yeah. I'm so agreeing with you.
And that and corruption just seems like it's depressing to think about politics. Like, oh my God, is anything going to change?
No. If everyone, if the 50% of American people who could vote did, probably. But there's nothing good to vote for.
Hmm.
So they're not interested, including me. Now, if there was like you could vote to have a thing where we would consider a resource-based economy as an alternative to our system. If you could vote that, just to consider, give it 10 years to look over. 5 years. No, two. 2 years. Give us 2 years to fully look it over and consider it as an option. If we could vote for that...
Well, that's possible. I mean, you're a citizen. You can petition any senator with your idea. And I mean, any you know, representative.
I think
Crockett, the Crockett councilman or whatever.
You know, there's an appeal.
You know, theoretically, the way the system theoretically works is that you could push that idea up to the top levels, get government funding for this pilot project, resource-based town.
Yeah. Which is already happening, privately funded, but...
Yeah, oh, well, there we go.
It's already called resource-based towns or something, or whatever.
Yeah, just, you know, email like elonmusk@tesla.com, pitch him your idea, and have it well presented, and just keep doing it, and, you know, maybe something will happen. And that's the beauty of the free market is that, yeah, you can just privately do that.
There's no money in what I'm saying, though. There's $0
to be made, you mean?
Yeah.
Well,
organizing it, there's a few bucks, but.
You mean to get it organized? You mean money that you would have to pay? Or
if I were to go to the senator of whatever that would be and go, look, I think we need to have a resource-based economy to be able, an option to be voted on.
Right.
Or something. 2 years of information sharing. Like, let people consider it and then go, should we try this? Or should we partly try it? Something. Like, I think they would laugh at me and go, well, duh, but that's never going to happen. That's what I think would happen.
Okay.
Am I wrong?
That's a little cynical. You're an optimist about so many things, but you're such a fucking pessimist about politics.
Yeah, it might be true.
The optimist version is like, he may not, he'll listen to you courteously and consider it, may not take it seriously, but if you're persistent and you have enough people that you could demonstrate this is a good idea, or just have other people like, yeah, let's try this. I mean,
the network of the movement alone is that.
Or if the whole town of Crockett was petitioning him, he'd be like, well, okay. So,
oh, maybe you start that way. So it is possible. If you went grassroots.
It's possible that way to go through someone else. But you could also, you could be the guy. You could just become the councilman for Crockett or whatever, you know. And just you just have that idea. And you present it yourself. Now, again, bureaucracy and corruption. So there would still be someone above you who could shoot down your idea and say, that's stupid. So there is no, like, and even if you're president, there's checks and balances. People can push back against your idea, right?
Executive orders are a little different than that, but yeah.
A little bit.
A little different.
But you can't just do anything with an executive order.
Right, you can't change, you can't break a law, and you...
it's not just like, okay, I'm fucking, everyone has to wear yellow hats on Tuesdays.
Yeah, you can't do it. It has to be about gray areas of things. I mean, it has to be about...
I mean, I think it is constrained. I don't know that much about it, but I think it is. There is a constrained amount of stuff you can do.
But I'm glad it exists. I mean, why not? I mean, what other reason than having a president than someone who could do something like that? Like, right. What the fuck else is the point?
And it's also like no one has – you never have absolute power.
No.
Even like you want to push the resource-based economy thing. Even if you're president, it's not like, okay, now you can just automatically do that.
You still have to promote it.
There's still some pushback.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be.
I agree.
Because otherwise you have dictatorship. You have tyranny.
Well, the freedom of speech thing is so important there.
Hell yeah.
And so critical.
It's almost the most important thing.
It's almost the most important thing because if you take it away, it's like feels like 1984.
Okay, let's add to our Scientific method, golden rule, free speech.
Okay.
That's a pretty good triumvirate.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Let's add that as
secular
a
triumvirate.
Third triopolis. Pardon me.
Those are some really great tools that have come out of culture. Scientific method, golden rule, free speech. Pretty good.
Free speech
is under attack, unfortunately.
Yeah. The golden rule is under attack.
Yeah.
For sure. I think it's slavery. That's kind of a pointer there.
Yeah.
You know, Asian technology manufacturing jobs are challenging. Clothing making jobs are challenging.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the golden rule's getting pushed on.
Golden rule version 2.0? Maybe we can come up with it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Maybe that's the scientific method golden rule for speech.
Is that like well, I like the moniker personally, nonviolent resource-based gratitude. That's what I am on my social media thingies.
Mm. Nonviolent in ways of communicating?
Nonviolent in the ways of communicating, acting, both to oneself and to others.
I do think, the thing is, I do think violence is one of those, it's the dot in the yin.
That's why we keep going to resource-based.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It always has to be a little bit of it.
Well, I mean, if you were cornered by a 70-pound wolf on one of our bike camping trips and I was gone, you're alone, and it was going to kill you, wouldn't your brain switch into, no, I'm going to kill you?
Right.
And that's natural.
Right. Aggression and violence are necessary.
Yeah. It's totally natural.
I totally believe that.
It's also not necessary.
How would you try to kill
much
it?
Of discourse. Much of discourse doesn't need violence.
Right. That's and hence free speech.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's not get all emotionally worked up, or we can get emotionally worked up, but let's, instead of getting in a fist fight, we both know the same language and we have intelligent minds. Well, how about we just talk about this?
Yeah.
We can get super fired up, we can walk away.
Yeah. Take a breather.
But I mean, this is the idea behind free speech, right?
Right.
Instead of getting in a fist fight, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Agree to disagree, maybe, idea. You know?
If you
agree to disagree. Instead of fighting, you agree to disagree.
Mm-hmm. If that's what it comes
like,
to.
Okay.
I think there are better outcomes than agree to disagree. I think that people
have shown that
you could take disagreeing groups.
But if that's the worst
Yeah.
That's pretty kick-ass.
Then let's take your head off.
Right. And I think still violence needs to exist, even with that outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, how would you attempt to kill the wolf that's cornered you?
What would be your technique? I would hope I had gloves because...
Nothing. You're naked.
I'm naked. I get underwear. I get underwear.
So you're not that... uncomfortable.
So, and also not that dainty, because he's got a sheath, I get a sheath to cover our genitals.
Okay.
Just that. So it's like short. I get shorts and Vibrams, because his pads are like...
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Bike. You have your bike shorts.
Bike shorts,
so a little Vibrams. Bit extra protection.
Okay, that's cool. I'll take those two. Honestly,
If he'd
come at me, I'd probably, you know... I'd probably grab an arm and then the neck, and then I would just squeeze until he stopped. He'd hurt me. I would be hurt.
So would you dive?
No. I would
He would probably leap. He'd leap for your throat.
If I could do a block of some kind, that would be advantageous. But I don't know if that would work. He's going to hurt me. There's no chance I'm not getting hurt.
He's
drawn blood for sure. I'm going to choke him to death, and it'll be a peaceful death, my hope is.
That's,
you know.
That would be the ideal way.
Yeah. What would you do? Is that the same thing?
Well, my original thing was like, I'm a smaller guy than you are. I'd maybe put my arm out, give him something to bite on, and then...
Come at the eyeballs or something?
Eyeballs, throat.
Yeah.
Or just headlock something.
Another weird thing about dogs and wolves is if you have your hands in their mouth... They can't, if their teeth are very wide apart, they don't have a lot of fighting. Only
that's
when
true. You can rip
together,
their jaw off. Yeah.
You can, yeah. It's so gross. I have two dogs. Gross. How dare you?
But it's a wolf. This is a rabid.
This is, we're talking about.
How about it's a
your
magical,
life's in danger.
Your life's in danger. A bear.
And that's where violence belongs.
What about a bear?
I'm dead. There's no fucking way.
Yeah, you're dead.
I'm gonna die. I just, thanks for eating me.
If you can go
goodbye.
Up a tree.
No, they go up trees, man. I'm dead. If I could, like, get a fire or big rocks,
yeah,
or
you're
maybe
pretty much fucked.
There's nothing. I can't fight a bear. No way. Even a baby one would fuck me up.
You could, like, jump off a cliff into a pond, though. A bear wouldn't do that.
No. It
wouldn't. A bear
go
wouldn't,
off a cliff.
A bear wouldn't be, like, jogging after you and running off the cliff. He would just, like, get to the end and be like, oh, man, I lost him. So, but I think you're right. Going up a tree, they'll
they
just shake the tree. Or they'll go so far up the tree will just topple over, and then you're on the ground again.
Or they climb up it and then bite your feet off. It's like if you could get a fire going somehow. It's like it's all about tools. If it's just underwear,
bike
shorts and
that's
Vibram,
for sure,
that's
it's about
it.
Tools. You should have a
I
gun.
Think wolf. I was watching this on the Joe Rogan. Actually, they had this whole similar conversation about defending wolf. Some sports player said that he could do it. And then people sent him all these photos of, like, magically gigantic wolves, like 200-pound wolves. And he's like, no, I mean an average wolf, right? So, no, a 200-pound wolf would fucking kill me. Absolutely kill me.
200-pound, yeah, that's a big wolf.
I could take, like, maybe a 100-pound wolf, maybe.
Bear would kill you, wolf kill you.
No, 100-pound below wolf, yes. Fox, everything below that, I could totally take.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like...
Bears,
not
sharks.
Not bears. No sharks. No, I can't fight with water. I'm not a water animal. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. I'm a land animal.
Apparently, you can punch sharks. You're supposed to punch sharks in the nose.
I've heard that's the only defense is fucking bop them in the nose. And they're like, ooh, yeah. It freaks them out.
I don't want to test if that's true.
Nope.
I'm sure it is.
So, this sort of can bring me to another topic. It's very related to violence. Like, I've always, when I was a little kid, I really enjoyed watching professional sports. Like, my dad, he was like, we're a 49ers family, right?
Uh-huh.
And, Joe Montana and Jerry Rice and then, Ronnie Lott and Steve Young. These were, like, kind of our gods.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
These were supreme beings of excellent athletic ability. And they were. And we were alive when they won all the time. Like, I grew up.
Right, the era of the Niners
kicking ass.
Right, right. That's like me and the Celtics, Boston Celtics.
Okay, nice, nice. So this bonded us with strangers in public places, and it meets this weird need where you have something to go against, and there's valor and it's like it's also gladiators. It's mm-hmm. our modern gladiators, right. and it's. And NFL, I think, is a really good example of that. Of course, hockey's fucking crazy and soccer's insane. But, like, NFL, they fight. You're just fighting a war all day trying to gain ground with your mm-hmm. fucking fingers. There's no professional football player who hasn't been injured. There's no college football player who hasn't been injured.
Right.
100% get injured in some fashion. So...
That's a good argument for sports, like it's sort of like gods on earth.
I mean, these people are super athletic. They're just amazing things.
Yeah.
And now we have this massive control of that. Speaking of stories, where the owners of the NFL have this. I mean, you hear about the contracts about what these players are paid. Like, wrestler over there wins $110 million over 7 years. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And those people
insane numbers
are coming out of inner cities. Uh-huh. Because you have all these football teams and all these high schools, sometimes not inner city, sometimes, big expensive places, of course, is a flow, but also poor places has a flow. So you have this enormous draw where all these children are watching the NFL and they're like, somebody from their high school, two people from their high school made it to the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I'm going to get and I'm going to do it. And you have this huge competition to be a gladiator throughout as early as fucking middle school sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then high school, really, and then college, and then, pro.
Right.
So it's like, it's this weird thing where there's such an incredible failure rate. So, like, if you were talking about an investing, and you tell all these kids going to these high schools investing in becoming a professional football player, the odds of that working out is like, what, terrible. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. No business advisor would fucking ever advise doing something that was that low of a probability of success.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people, it's like, it's just huge. So many people are on board with this as a thing to do.
Sports. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then now we have so much profit and power at the Super Bowl for the commercials. Like, that's a powerful place to be
mm-hmm.
in culture. I mean,
it's
almost everybody's looking at that.
It's like a pastime.
Mm-hmm.
Super Bowl commercials is now sort of more interesting than the Super Bowl.
Sort of is.
It's like more of a pastime, you know.
So these players are signing these gigantic checks. And then you think about, well, who's writing those fucking checks? That fucking guy.
Right.
Right, this is kind of a Chris Rock reference.
Right. I was just going to say, yeah.
So.
Like, Shaq is rich. The guy who writes Shaq's check is wealthy.
Oh, yeah. That, like, he said that. That's, yeah, those are his words.
Chris Rock.
And so, like, I now think that there's so much energy in the form of money and talent being not just wasted, but used to destroy our own selves. And there's so much money involved that we need to look at that whole thing and maybe updating some ways that is.
Hmm.
And it's like...
Like that's one of the major problems of society?
Culture, of our culture. It's one of the major problems of our culture.
Hmm. That money exists?
No, that, well, yeah, I mean, that's not what I was saying. I was saying that the sports teams, in their extreme proclivity of economic power is one of the major problems of our culture. And that gladiatorship in itself is not bad. Human achievement, physical excellence is not bad, but using it to destroy our own people.
You mean the sort of mass marketing of sports?
Like the professional sports? Mass marketing is one of two dozen elements that are totally poisonous about it.
Hmm.
Because not only is it bad for those who try and fail to get in, but it's really bad for those who get in.
Because they get injured and...
And often bankrupt. I mean, this is most of the time.
Hmm. It's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. It seems like we need entertainments. We need the gladiatorial thing, right?
But do we need to destroy each other to do it?
No.
That's why I'm way more for, like, obstacle course type entertainment. Like Beastmaster, for example.
Right.
The first episode of that on Netflix, I was, like, screaming. I was so excited by watching incredible human achievements.
Is that like Roman soldiers type?
Yeah. It's like they're climbing on the dragon's tongue and you swing on the rope of danger and like it's silly. Okay. And it's like the president of Idiocracy is now the host of Ouch My Balls. That's a true thing. The show I'm talking about, Beastmasters, there's a scene where he's explaining. That, he got hit in the, I don't know. Well, what do you call that? Well, I think we'll just call that the Jules. It's like, he's literally the host of Ouch My Balls. The guy who played the president in Idiocracy.
Right. So
that's a problem.
Are you saying, you're saying that Beastmaster is poor entertainment?
Thanks for asking. I'm saying,
I thought you were saying that it's like a good alternative to football.
What I'm saying is that the fact that exists with the host the show is that guy is the dot to me of the idea.
Right.
That's like, wow, really? He's hosting Ouch My Balls? He did the movie about why Ouch My Balls is funny, and he's hosting it now.
Right.
And I think that type of thing is incredibly better than using these beautiful human beings of incredible talent to destroy each other.
Mock-up gladiatorial games.
Where they work to improve against themselves instead of destroying others. As an alternative.
I agree. But isn't football getting safer?
Slowly, but they aren't even measuring how many concussions are happening, and it's nearly
I know it's a big problem, and it does seem ridiculous, but I have to, you know, I have to play the other side.
What's the other side?
Sports are awesome. Sports are awesome. We want to see people hurt each other, and we want to see competition of people with peak performance competing and hurting each other. We want to see that. We want to
like
watch
boxing.
I mean, football is very. It's almost the perfect sport because it really is like a battleground. You gain ground and you lose ground, right?
Mm-hmm. It's war.
It's all the first. That's all the downs are. First, second down. That's just you got to gain. You got to get to their fucking end zone, right? You got to raid their castle.
Flag.
You got to raid their castle. Capture their princess. Kill their king. And I think we're always going to want that. And I don't know if, you know, it could get safer and safer. And maybe eventually, instead of actual people, it could just be robots or something. Right? So we're just sort of watching this play, really. A battle play. It's just a representation of battle. We just watch it and like, oh, nice. My team won. My team lost. No humans are hurt.
There's soccer machines now that play soccer very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that in like 20 years, they'll have robots that can defeat the world FIFA team.
I believe it.
On the field. Like chess now.
Right, they've already done it with chess. I was going to say Deep Blue already proved that can be done in a very, very niche area of human achievement. But certainly computers can compute numbers, right? Faster than we can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'll just keep expanding. The abilities of computers, sort of the areas of expertise, will just continue to expand. And there'll be less and less areas where humans excel. And there'll probably be like that itself will be an evolutionary process. Where we're seeing machines that can do almost everything I can do, and we're like, well, what? How can I outcompete this machine? I think we'll want to do that. So there'll always be a give and take, maybe until they overlap perfectly. You know, like computer achievements, like this circle going out. Human achievement, same thing, or human ability, and the center circle is constantly getting out. So eventually, the human achievement circle is eclipsed by the computer or AI achievement circle. That seems like the singularity.
Yeah, inevitable.
And it's kind of cool, though, too.
It's scary and cool.
It's scary and cool, but it's also, how scary is it that you have a calculator rotting in a drawer somewhere? Like, that's not that scary. Yet,
it's not that scary.
Yet it once took away jobs from humans.
Right.
It basically replaced that whole area. Like, we don't really have to worry about that anymore. As humans on Earth, we don't really have to worry about how math works and all this long division and all that stuff. It's good to know because it's good to know processes. But we don't have to know how to do that all the time. Because we just have a calculator. And so, yes, it's scary, but everything will become eventually like the calculator is to us now.
I'm worried that's not true.
So like the chess computer, Deep Blue, it'll just be a calculator sitting in someone's drawer unused eventually. And human minds will be on other problems. They'll be out ahead, advancing on some other concept. And computers will be sort of running to catch up to our capability, I think, until the singularity.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
until we have perfect... until we understand the brain, essentially.
I thought you were talking about after singularity, because, like, no, then we get past.
No, I'm talking about the run-up to the singularity.
Gotcha.
Humans are still going to be outpacing computers in very abstract ways, like pattern recognition, emotional kind of, like, psychotherapy.
Yeah, we're going to be therapists to the androids of the future.
And so it's almost like humans are going to be doing all these wicked fucking abstract, kick-ass, artistic, creative endeavors. Philosophy, you know, psychology, art. And the computers are just going to be doing all the other stuff, building cars and clothes and all that other stuff.
Fuck, you know? Yeah.
So that seems like a cool thing. That's my yes and on your saying that it's scary. It is scary. For sure it's scary.
Some people say we have one chance to get it right. If we don't treat it like the Manhattan Project, where we build a team of teams around this, to have the conditions be just so that we can live with this new god.
That consensus is growing more. That consensus is now like climate change.
Yeah. I hope so.
In the sort of, most people accept that that's true. That
we need to take.
There's an inherent threat in trying to push the limits of artificial intelligence. And yeah, I mean, there's so much there. There's so much to unpack there. I have to whiz.
And we're back.
I'm back.
Okay. So now we left off with AI there, and I want to know if we should continue with AI or if there's another, should we change direction on the topic? What do you say?
Do you have another topic? I'm okay with changing topics. I was going to bring up earlier with our religion idea. What if you had, this is an idea from a book, a science fiction book, nuclear war. So you have mutants after the nuclear war. This one person has two heads, so two brains, right?
Oof.
Which means each one of them could have different beliefs, right? Mm-hmm. And I forget the particulars of the sort of more details about it, but that's just a weird idea.
Like one body could have
Siamese twin with like two you know, two belief systems.
So they might, how would they practice religion?
Or one person with two heads is better, because it's like, who is really saved? Who does God save? Who is redeemed?
Like if one is and one isn't?
Right.
Ooh, that's an argument.
Isn't that great?
For agnosticism, at least.
It's a great, like, science fictional concept, you know? Mm. Or if you had an AI, right, that developed its own religion, let's say it was a creative AI and developed its own religion, how valid is that?
Just as valid as...
What are the parameters of its validity? Who created that religion? Is it the team of programmers that built the AI 20 years ago? It's an interesting question. I don't have any answers, but it's pretty cool to think about. An AI could develop a whole system of culture. If it was smart enough, it could develop a whole system of culture.
Yeah.
And new religions and et cetera. And I think that's the... that's sort of the concern in artificial intelligence research. Is that it's going to happen, right? Google and Facebook... I guess I went to religion back to AI. Google, Facebook, probably some other companies are... at this very moment, I'm sure, working on artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
And they know that there's steep competition. They know that whoever gets it first is going to have a huge leg up.
I mean, enormous.
Yeah. And so there's a singularity, but there's a book called Superintelligence that recently came out. Sam Harris talks about it, actually. Basically arguing that AIs becoming smarter than humans and more competent is essentially an inevitability. That it just is gonna happen, 100%.
I agree.
And there is no mitigation. There is no way to mitigate against it. There is no protecting it.
No, because anyone could be doing it.
There is no protecting us from it.
No,
it's just and he just lays it out. Chapter by chapter, like, oh, this is the scenario you're presenting. No, not gonna work. Huge sensation in the AI community.
It's possible,
and that was like a couple years ago.
It's possible that we could do all of our A+ efforts to prepare, like the Manhattan Project, and
never
then
prepare enough.
None of it matters. Like, that's possible.
All you can do is. Yeah, address the risks that you see already, but there's always going to be another one, right? There's always going to be the hole in the system, the violence, the whatever, the mutation that comes in, and you're like, whoa, never saw that. Like, no one predicted the impact of the internet.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, social networks and all this other stuff.
I thought it was a fad.
So there's always the problem of framing, like, you frame it a certain way, and then later, in retrospect, it seems like, oh, wow, how could we have not have seen this obvious problem with it?
Hmm.
And, yeah, that's probably what AI is going to be.
Hmm. Are you ready to have a skull-opening, direct-to-brain interface with AI? Are you ready for that?
Like, personally?
Yeah,
personally. Would I do that?
Well, I mean, it's coming. AI exists, yeah. And you can get this implant in your brain, probably several implants,
mm-hmm.
that would directly link you, your neural network to AI.
A little chip, a little accelerator.
Or probably several.
Or like a router. Just some little... Yeah. It starts small, mm-hmm. right? I don't know if I'm ready for it, but I probably would do it. If it was tested, I wouldn't be a test pilot. I wouldn't be an early adopter.
Got it. So how many people would need to do it before you did it?
Gosh, I don't know.
100?
Probably the government would probably regulate it.
Well, they may not be able to.
And they would be like pacemakers, like, okay, it's approved for field use.
I don't think the government will have the power. It's like if it's
you think it'll be that price. That shit's probably, yeah.
It doesn't matter what the government says.
Well, I mean, I don't know what. It's like you wear glasses. Yeah. I'd ask you the same question. How many people would you have to know have worn glasses and it's helped them before you would start? It's hard to think about because we've just been wearing glasses forever.
Yeah.
But wearing glasses is only a layer of epidermis away from an implant in your brain, right?
Correct.
We're already cyborgs. We talked about that on the previous
podcast.
As I get
older, I would more consider eye surgery as I get older. But a year ago, even 5 months ago, I was like, absolutely never. Because it's terrifying. You've seen the video? It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. Yeah. But it's
you have no pain receptors in your eyeball. Ugh. But it is, yeah, it makes you cringe.
I use these laser so much.
Laser,
oh my gosh.
Skimming off layers of your eyeball with lasers.
It's razor blades. It's not even, dude, they literally take a knife, they pinch your eye open and cut with a razor blade your clear part, flap it over, then burn your eyeball with a laser, then flap it back, and the knife retreats.
Yeah, there's a reason I don't watch the video. I don't.
I didn't want to. My mom tricked me. I didn't realize how horrifying
it was.
It's
so cringe-inducing.
My mom had to do it twice.
I know. Once you start fucking with opening up your body and...
There's got to be a better way,
once you start
dude.
Opening up your body and, like, letting technology in, it's pretty scary.
There's got to be a better way. But I do want nanorobots in my bloodstream.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I do.
Gray cells. Von Neumann probes. Mark Thorpe, he got his fucking chest opened up, thing put in.
For the implant.
Yeah. Or, sorry, his brain. His...
Yeah, for his MS,
both,
right?
Both, his brain and his torso.
He was on the show.
He has a chip in his brain.
What are you doing?
And a little relay in his brain, and then a battery in his chest. Full cyborg.
Fuck yeah! How's he doing?
He's doing great.
Is it working?
Yeah, hell yeah!
Wow.
He doesn't have dyskinesia. You can turn it on and off. And he doesn't have dyskinesia, which is like uncontrollable muscle movements, but he has like this to charge the battery. He has to put on like almost like if you were carrying a scarf over your shoulder, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it like drapes over in the front and then drapes over in the back, and it's like big metal or lead plates on either like on the front and back of his chest. Because the battery's in between them, and it charges the battery while it's still inside of his body. But he has to like sling this mantle over his shoulder. That shit's already here. Like that, putting stuff in your body, technology in your body, it's already here, man.
It's a bummer they couldn't just plug it into his natural system.
Like a USB port.
Yeah, because we do we're generating power. That's what Matrix is. So it's
right.
It could be collecting that.
He just has like another, like existence. There's just right above your, right where your tailbone is, just a little input, a little coax.
Thoop.
And you just charge your batteries, all the batteries that are in your body. You just charge them through the spinal cord.
That's like early. That's like transitional technology.
That's a great movie, by the way, Existence.
That's cool.
So yeah. How many people would have to have a brain implant
before you would do it?
Probably like 10,000.
10,000?
No, it would probably have to be, it would be a number of time and years. Like it would be a number of people and years.
What were those?
Like a town size for.
So like.
Let's say
25,000 people, something like that.
10,000. Okay. I think a city's 25.
Oh, yeah, okay.
For a few generations. Like it has to demonstrate
generations. You're never going to time for that.
Okay, me now today.
Yeah.
Shit, I don't know. 5 year, 10 years. People have been living with it for 10 years and there's no problems. They're still functional. There's no like brain rot. Something. I don't know. I'd have to sort of wait 10 years.
10 years. Okay.
First guy gets a heart transplant. It's like, okay, it's working for him. I guess it would be different. If it was something that could save my life, I'd probably do it immediately. If it was just an add-on.
It's just an add-on.
I would probably wait for a while to see, just sort of see what happens to other people who have had it.
So wealthy people first will be trying this, right? It's going to happen. Probably.
Richard Branson.
Yeah.
And
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. Ray Kurzweil.
Mm-hmm. He's weirdly, Ray Kurzweil looks better than he did a couple years ago. Did you notice that? He like looks a little bit less dead now. He was looking rough like 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, really?
Now I saw him recently. I was like, oh, he looked, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being generous, but he looked a lot better. He takes like 500 pills a day.
He's also, he gets new blood. How fucked up is this? This is very vampiric. He gets, this is something he wrote. He's like, yeah, I get regular blood transfusions. Just a whole new batch of blood put in my body. And I think it's like, I want to say that it's younger blood. So isn't that fucking a little creepy?
It's kind of scary. Is he just doing it for fun? Is he just sick or
for
is
health.
He doing
No, for he
Who's he, how's he buying he, that?
He's he's wealthy, man.
You just go like, give me your blood.
No. It's people that have already died. I mean, there's like blood. There's reserves. There's blood banks, right?
Yeah.
You can buy blood. There's like fresh. It's not super fresh, but I mean,
I can just go buy blood. Or doctors.
I mean, there
have
would be
to
some
it.
Procedures.
Okay.
But if you're Ray Kurzweil, you probably could. Just somehow. Yeah. So it's not like he's not like he's killing someone and taking their blood. Person has already donated it
from dying,
or just from a blood drive. And he gets fucking he gets transfusions of blood. It's like a drain and fill.
Yeah, it's like a drain and fill.
It's a drain and fill of blood.
What's a drain and fill, Aubrey? What happens at a drain and fill?
Drain and fill is a hot tub procedure.
How would we?
You drain the water out, clean the tub, and then you put a new batch of water in it, making sure that there's no air bubbles in the system.
Right.
Which you probably have to do with blood transfusion, too.
I think that would be important.
But yeah, I don't think they like drain his body and then fill it up. I think it's just they sort of recirculate it. Right. You just die.
I think they start pumping it in before they start taking it out.
Totally.
That's probably
totally.
What happens.
Yeah. There's an input and an output.
That
and
sounds just, so terrifying. Like, I can't.
You got veins and arteries, right? One's going towards, one's going away. So you easily just flush the system.
Yeah.
That's so fucking. Would I do that? I don't know, man.
I would, but I don't want to. It can't be from getting the blood nefariously. Like
right,
when I'm
right, right, right,
when
right.
I'm 60, sure, I'll take some
but
blood.
But he doesn't. The thing is, he doesn't need to do that. He just does that to experiment on his own body and replenish his.
I'm for experiments
because he's like. I mean, what's cool about it is that he's sort of committing to the idea of the singularity already.
Yeah.
He's not just talking about it. He's like actually fucking with his biology, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
Okay, that was a good episode.
What's your idea?
That was my idea. Was just to fade how to fade this in. I was sort of talking to myself.
Should we do the outro music?
Let's do the outro music. All right, guys. That was a good episode. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Podcast for Empathy and Imagination. Aubrey Cloutier here.
Drew Clark, empathyandimagination.com, iTunes/the podcast for Empathy and Imagination.
Empathyandimagination.com.
Empathyandimagination.com/YouTube. Check out our new videos.
Thanks for listening, guys. and gals.